All right, and everyone signed in? All right, then we're ready to roll when you are.
May it please the court, Your Honors. My name is Dalton Glass. I'm from the Public Defender's Office in Chesapeake. I represent Michael Johnson. At this time, I respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
3 minutes, yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. The case before you, I think, is an interesting one. The defendant, the appellant at this point, is he was being interviewed by an officer after being caught, being in custody, and he told the officer, "I do not want to speak to anybody." After the officer asked him if he wanted to cooperate with some narcotics detectives, and at trial, the defendant alleged that the officer's continuing interrogation of him after he said, "I do not want to speak to anybody," violated his Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. In order to invoke the right to remain silent, one has to do so unequivocally.
Counsel, do you recall his words as being, "I don't want to speak to anybody"?
Yes, ma'am, that's exactly how.
What do I need to talk to him about?
Well, Your Honor, I can point to exactly the point on the record where the trial court expressly found where he said, "I do not want to speak to anybody." And
the videotape was introduced, right?
The videotape is in evidence, Your Honor, but the trial court also found that the videotape was not, it wasn't the clearest, exactly, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And the officer did testify on page 30 of the joint appendix that, the defendant just said, "I don't want to speak to anybody." And then on 56 of the appendix, the trial court expressly finds that when he said he didn't want to talk to anybody, it was in the nature of this,
didn't want to talk to anybody in place in
narcotics. Right, and that's what the trial court found, exactly. That when he said, "I don't want to speak to anybody," he was saying that he didn't want to speak to anybody, meaning narcotics detectives. And so he moved to suppress the evidence based on his invocation of his right to remain silent. The following statements are very bad for the defendant. Essentially full confession, and admitted to stealing or to selling it, bad stuff. So we argued on appeal, which is why we're here today, that when saying he did not want to speak to anybody, that is as unequivocal as it gets. Anybody includes the officer that's asking the question.
Don't you have to look at that in the context of the conversation?
I would say no. The context of the conversation, I suppose it's a relevant circumstance, perhaps, but the point of requiring an unequivocal invocation is that he puts the officer on notice that this is what I want. I don't want to speak to anybody. For the officer to completely ignore the statement as if it doesn't apply to him, as if he's only talking to the narcotics officer, and continuing to ask questions of the defendant, it kind of just forgets the whole, it's as if he didn't say it.
So you're saying it's sort of like magic words. Once he says that, regardless of the context, all talking to me officer has to stop.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. So I think once he says that, officer is put on notice, he's invoked his right to remain silent, can't keep asking questions. If he had only meant it for the narcotics officer, which let's say he did, it would still be, the officer should still have said, "Listen, he said I don't want to speak to anybody, I've got to stop speaking to him." Instead, he continues to ask questions, and the defendant eventually makes a full confession. He also, in the AG's brief, the Attorney General's brief, they say that he reinitiated conversation subsequently. But his initial invocation was never scrupulously honored. So the continuing of the conversation was not part of the defendant's, it wasn't his initiation of the conversation. At this point, his invocation of his right to remain silent had been not scrupulously honored, so his rights have already been violated. And there's a lot of cases out there where the defendant made statements that were just not clear. He would say things like, "I'm not sure if I should speak to anybody," or "I just don't think I should say anything. Do I have to talk about it right now?" The Supreme Court of the United States expressly said in Burgess v. Tompkins that had the appellant you know, said that he did not want to talk with the police, that would have been enough for him to invoke his right to remain silent. Here, he said, I don't want to talk to anybody. He did not say, I don't want to talk to the detectives. He did not say that I don't want to cooperate with the police. He said, I don't want to speak to anybody. When somebody says, I don't want to speak to anybody, I can't imagine him not having invoked his right. I mean, does the guy have to express to say, I hereby invoke my Fifth Amendment right to remain silent and no longer wish to be questioned by anybody before his Fifth Amendment rights are invoked? And I just don't think that that's the case. And I don't think that there's any case out there that says he has to expressly use magic words to invoke his Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. The other two assignments of error concern his possession. The second assignment of error concerns his possession. He testified, or the evidence showed at trial, that he identified some pills as Percocet, and some of the pills were Percocet. That's the oxycodone that he was found with. The problem is there were a bunch of other pills in the set as well, and he identified pills that were not Percocet as being Percocet. And then he got convicted of possession of these other pills that happened to be Percocet. And so this is a Sierra versus a DeYoung case. There's a Sierra case that says that the markings on the pills were enough to put the defendant on notice that this was, these were narcotics. You can know the nature and character just by the markings of the pills. And the trial court in Sierra expressly found as much. There's no express finding in this case that the markings on the pills were sufficient. He said, he identified some pills as being Percocet. Those pills weren't Percocet, but these pills were Percocet. And without any kind of finding that these pills, the shapes and the markings on the pills were enough to make this case more like the Sierra case, then that would be a different scenario. In this case, it's more like the Young case, where just because he's got pills in his pocket, without anything more, is not enough, or, pills that he has to be aware of the nature and character of the substance. So I don't think that burden's been met here. And the last assignment of error is that the defendant did not, the evidence was insufficient to corroborate his confession. Here he clearly said, listen, I'm selling these, or I'm exchanging these, I'm trying to make profit off of it. However, he's only got a small amount of cocaine in his pockets, like 1.5 grams. And we argued on appeal and at trial that, just his statements alone are not enough. That the Commonwealth, the Attorney General, did allege that it wasn't preserved properly because his statement that he, we didn't expressly say the corpus delicti hasn't been proved. However, we did argue at trial that without the statement.
The fact that it's cocaine?
No, Your Honor, not of possession with intent to distribute. For possession,
if I say, I got something to sell, but there aren't any drugs, I agree.
Yeah, so
if I say I got something to sell and I got drugs, doesn't that corroborate my confession?
Well, Your Honor, if I had walked up to somebody with a small joint and I showed it to the police, it's like, yes, officer, this is the joint. Earlier I had 3 pounds of it, is that enough to convict me of possession with intent to distribute 3 pounds of marijuana just because I have a tiny?
What about the scales?
The scale is important. It is
evidence against
it would be important. However, there was no expert to testify what the scale is used for in distributing context. There was nothing to go towards that. If there had been an expert that testified, this is probative of distribution, that would be important, but there was no expert here. They just had his confession and his simple possession of a small amount of cocaine, not a lot of money, no text messages of, distribution, which is what we usually see, some guy that is selling. And there's nothing really to corroborate his statement. And when it's a lesser included, like his cocaine, Your Honor, Haley, the fact that he has this small amount of cocaine on him, possession of cocaine is it's a lesser included of possession with intent to distribute. And it's also the reasonable hypothesis of innocence that the Commonwealth has to exclude. So we're asking that when it is a lesser included, like it is in this case, I think that his simple possession of it is not enough to get him to corroborate his, you know, the rest of his confession.
Are you asking us to reduce it to possession?
No, Your Honor. I like the court to dismiss the thing outright.
Well, obviously.
Yes, but if the court would be inclined to do that, I would take that over than, you know, him, the alternative, him, you know, affirming the trial court.
I presume you would.
Yeah, thank you. I'd take the opportunity. If there's any other questions, I'll save the rest of my time for the one.
Very well. Thank you. Ms. Gardner.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Susan Baumgartner for the Office of the Attorney General. May it please the court. The defendant in this case did not clearly and unambiguously assert his right to remain silent. In fact, there is no evidence on those videos that he ever said, "I don't want to talk to anybody." His entire appeal is crafted around the idea that somehow he said, "I don't want to talk to anybody." And the only place where that's found in the record is where Officer Wood, at hearing, characterizes his statement as, "I don't want to talk to anybody." But when you look at the video itself, which was in evidence and was viewed by the court before it ruled, that is Wood trying to clarify what the defendant wants to do. Because Wood says, I'll call narcotics, maybe they can help you.
Well, excuse me. If the police officer testifies, then I got the impression where he said, "I don't want to talk to anybody." Doesn't that strengthen the appellant's case?
Except
it is to the point that the police, regardless of what he said, the police understand that what he was saying was, "I don't want to talk to anybody."
Except that the police understanding of that was in the context of, "I don't want to speak with narcotics detectives," not, "I don't want to speak to you, I don't want to speak to the police." It was, when I offered to call narcotics, he said, "No, I don't want to speak to anybody."
To call narcotics for the purpose of the defendant cooperating as a confidential informant.
Correct. When he first presented that option to the defendant's response was, "Like I said, I got to take everything." And then, as is good police procedure, when there's some ambiguity about what's going on, Officer Wood attempted to clarify by saying, "So you're not going to talk to nobody, you don't want to talk to the detective, I'm asking." And then the defendant said something along the lines of, "I don't know what you mean by, and a truck passes by, so it's not completely clear on the tape." But it's clear in the back and forth and in the context that Wood was offering to call a narcotics detective if Johnson changed his mind, and Johnson said, "I'm going to take the weight. I don't want to speak to them." And then, after that, even though that wasn't a clear and unambiguous invocation, Officer Wood stepped away. He did, if this court were to find that was a clear and unambiguous invocation, he did scrupulously honor it because he stepped away from the defendant, and he started to put the window up of the back seat of his car and speak to another officer. And it was then that the defendant called him back and said, "You know, what's that baggie? I don't even know what it was. I'm curious." So even if this court finds that he did clearly and unambiguously say that he did not want to speak to any police officer, he then called the police officer back after the officer had ended that conversation. Now, with regards to whether the evidence established that the defendant knew the nature of his oxycodone, he clearly knew he had Percocet with him. He said to the officer, "That's Percocet," when the officer was holding multiple baggies of pills. And Percocet is oxycodone. It's oxycodone with acetaminophen. He identified not just, "I have an illegal controlled substance," but he identified it by brand name. That clearly shows that he knew the nature of it. And he did not, in fact, have to know the brand name or have to know the specific drug. He only needed to know that it was a controlled substance, not precisely what it was. And in this case, he had what were clearly prescription pills, marked Watson/749, individually wrapped within a baggie, stored with other tablets, also identified with letters and numbers. This is all on the lab report. So therefore, there was clear evidence that he knew the nature of it as a controlled substance. And finally, about the evidence, whether the evidence established intent to distribute cocaine, the intent itself does not need to be corroborated. There merely needs to be some physical evidence related to the confessed illegal act. And here, there was the actual drugs. There were five distinct drugs, which certainly suggests distribution as opposed to personal use. There was the scale. And although nobody testified at trial, the scale is clearly used in the distribution. When Officer Wood found it on that video, he starts saying, "We got Peewid, we got Peewid," meaning that scale clearly indicated to him that this was not a mere possession, this was a possession with the intent to distribute. And additionally, the defendant had a BB gun, and guns also indicate an intent to distribute. If there are no further questions?
Hearing none.
I ask you to affirm. Thank you.
Your Honor, just real quickly, I don't want to reiterate too much of what I already argued, but the Commonwealth just said that on page, the only evidence where they said, "I don't want to talk to anybody," is when the officer testified to that. And it wasn't that clear in the video, as I said earlier, but the court also specifically found, the court finds that when he said he didn't want to talk to anybody, I mean, that's right there. Court trial court found it. We're bound by the trial court's findings.
What page are you on?
Page 56 of the joint appendix, Your Honor. And page 34 of that transcript from February 25th. But so then that's the thing, the presence of the scale and the presence of multiple different types of drugs might be relevant, like I said, if there had been an expert to testify. That these are important. With regard to his statements in the Percocet and the oxycodone, he identified some of the pills as being oxycodone, and the motion to strike makes it pretty clear, and maybe I should have been more clear in my petition. He was identifying wrong pills as being oxycodone, and that's why we said that he didn't, he thought that the wrong pills were actually Schedule 6. The ones that he identified as oxycodone or Schedule 6, he wasn't charged with that. It's like a, I don't know what the term was, but
he knew he had oxycodone and knew he had Percocet, but he was mixing them up.
He thought he had Percocet with these other pills, Your Honor, but he didn't. He had something else, Schedule 6 for those pills. And so when he said, "I've got Percocet and these pills," he never actually said, he said, "I don't know what these pills are."
He misidentified the Percocet pills then.
No, Your Honor. In my petition, I said it just because he thought he knew what some of the pills were, doesn't mean that he had the nature and character of the oxycodone now. I think that that's what the Attorney General alluded to, that I misidentified Percocet and oxycodone, which it does look like that on my transcript, but he identified the wrong pills as the Percocet. And the motion to strike makes it pretty clear.
Well, Percocet is a trade name, but it's actually oxycodone.
Yes, Your Honor. Exactly. Thanks.
All right, that concludes the docket for this morning. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All right.